This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we are slated to hear from State Senator Albert Guillory, a black Republican running for lieutenant governor and speaking out as a newborn Republican against the state's most prominent Democrat, U.S. Senator Mary Landrieu, who's up for re-election in 27 days. We'll talk with Albert Guillory. Also, conductor, or rather composer, Augusta Reed Thomas, coming to LSU, and we will hear from her about her remarkable career. And writer Mike Kelly, his book is The Bus on Jaffa Road. A spiral of horror and reckoning emerges from the death of a young American couple in a terrorist bombing in Israel. All this, but now the news on 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number outside the area. It is 877-217-5757. You may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org, and you may tweet us at Jim Inkster Show. Frank Barnett is the producer, and our guest is State Senator Albert Guillory from Opelousas, a Republican, former Democrat who changed parties last year and has had over a million people view his message on YouTube. And he has another one of those messages in which he is endorsing the defeat of U.S. Senator Mary Loretto Landrieu Snellings, who's seeking a fourth term in 27 days. Good morning, Senator Albert Guillory.
Good morning, Jim. How are you?
I'm doing well. Why are you so staunchly against Senator Mary Landrieu, who obviously has support from many Republicans in Louisiana?
I'm against any politician who comes to my community at election time and gives us a big kiss and a big embrace and then puts us on the back burner until election time once again. We were doing a tour of one of the poorest areas in my community, which is right where I grew up. Hill section in Opelousas, and the problems of unemployment, the problems of education, the problems of safety are endemic, and Mary's been missing. We don't need politicians who are missing.
Well, you're blaming this on Senator Landrieu?
What I'm saying is that she has done absolutely nothing about it. She has not addressed those issues that are important to my community. And I'm not just talking about that street and that area in this city. I'm talking about the minority community across the state of Louisiana. Those problems.
Well, maybe she deserves some criticism, which you're levying, but what about Governor Jindal? He's gone most of the time, it seems, and he is governor of Louisiana. Does he share some blame?
I'm not criticizing missing Mary. I'm criticizing missing anyone, everyone, who has not addressed these issues. I will say that with respect to job creation, under the Jindal administration, Louisiana has moved from 42nd in job creation and economic development to 8th in the United States. So the jobs are here, the 80,000 new jobs. The Jindal administration has been very good in creating jobs. We have, in my district, we've opened several new industries. Welcomed them to Louisiana, and so the jobs are here. We do need to have our community more ready for those jobs, which is an education problem. And Bobby's been a thing. If all politicians address those two issues, as well as the governor has done, we would be in a lot better condition.
All right. 297-5633 is your number. Albert Guillory, the senator from Opelousas, who became a Republican last year, is trying to take aim and is doing so at U.S. Senator Mary Landrieu. Now, I would imagine if you ask Senator Landrieu, she would point to a number of efforts she's made in Washington to help Louisiana entice jobs? Does she get credit for the good things if you're giving her credit for the bad things, or giving her blame for the bad things?
If I see the efforts, I would certainly give credit. I just have not seen those. She has been very supportive of the administration, the national administration, which has come down to Louisiana and attempted to destroy the program, which handles 10,000, fewer than 10,000, actually, mostly minority, 90% minority, little minority kids who are in some of the trashiest, least producing, most violent schools, and they've moved from those and taken the almost all of the money, but not quite all of the money that the state would have given them in the public school system, moved down to a private school, and they're getting a good education in a safe environment. She supported that administration's effort to destroy those vouchers. That has been that's something that is in the craw of the black community, because it hurts us more than anyone else. 90% of those voucher kids are little black children trying to get a good education.
Josh at LSU. Josh, good morning. You're on the air with Senator Guillory.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Senator. You know, whenever I saw the video, I was pretty astonished and just wondering why you're criticizing Senator Landrieu while she's fighting to expand Medicaid and fighting to, raise the minimum wage, which would benefit many Louisianians, especially many black Louisianians.
All right. Does Josh have a point?
Raising the minimum wage will do no good for the masses of black folk, because we don't have any jobs at all. I think that the two things that are critical are to have a job opportunity and to be job ready. Education would make us job ready. So it's required that we have a good educational system, and we need jobs. We need more jobs.
297-5633. Charlotte in New Iberia. Charlotte, good morning. You're on the air with Senator Guillory.
Good morning to you, too. I'm calling to ask the senator whether he has included the jobs that were a part of Mayor Kip Holden's enticement of foreign countries to establish companies or businesses here. Thank you. Bye.
What about foreign countries coming to Louisiana? What do you think of that, and is there a full-court press to make it a palatable place to do business for countries abroad?
If foreign countries come to Louisiana and bring good jobs without destroying our environment, and good-paying jobs, I have no problem with that. I would welcome them in Lake Charles. A German company is coming and is going to open a plant, and they will provide 80,000 jobs for Louisianans, and those will be good-paying jobs. My biggest concern is that not enough Louisianans are job-ready, so we're scrambling now to have our high schools and technical schools and community colleges preparing people for those jobs. So I don't mind. If a foreign country comes and brings good jobs to Louisiana, welcome. We'll welcome some gumbo.
297-5633, Kane in Lafayette. Kane, good morning. You're on with Senator Guillory.
Yes, I just wanted to make a comment in regards to Mary Landrieu's lack of leadership. I think her and the whole Obama agenda has just been missing one key thing, and that's leadership overall. And, you know, that's what we need here in Louisiana. That's what we need here in the United States. And for us to continue down that path, when obviously she's been given more than ample time to demonstrate that leadership. It's just another effort in us failing to move forward.
Well, Kane, do you think the economy is doing better or worse under President Obama than it did under President Bush?
Well, I think the economy is probably doing a little bit better, but it's not sustainable given, you know, our current leadership in terms of foreign policy. All of the issues going around the world, that's just not sustainable. I mean, we need to be in a position to where not only we can grow and sustain our economy here at home, but put us in a position to where worldwide we're not trying to fend off all of these other problems and trying to focus on our internal issues at the same time.
All right, Senator, what do you think?
I think that young man is absolutely correct. And certainly in my community, unemployment is higher now than it was 6 years ago. Poverty rates are higher today than they were 6 years ago. More people are on Social Security disability than on jobs as a result of the policies of the federal government during the past 2 years alone. So, yes, he's correct.
Marie in Opelousas. Good morning, Marie. You're on with Albert Guillory.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. On April 14, 2014, I contacted Senator Guillory about a specific piece of legislation, SB 250, requesting the Senator's vote against it.
Against what?
Requesting his vote against the SB 250 legislation. And on April 22nd, I received one line reply from the senator that said, "I will not support SB 250. I agree with you wholeheartedly with the word not in uppercase letters." But that's exactly what the senator did, exactly the opposite. He voted yay. He told me he would vote no, and he voted yay.
All right. Do you recall that, Senator?
I had some difficulty hearing, and I'm having difficulty understanding.
All right,
what's the
she said
issue.
Says Senate Bill 250.
What is it? We deal with 5,000.
An education bill, but she says you indicated to her you would vote one way and then voted another.
I'm not familiar with that situation.
Liz
and
Hammond.
I don't know what Senate Bill 250 is.
Liz and Hammond, good morning, Liz. You are on with Senator Albert Guillory.
To ask Senator Guillory why he's pointing all these guns at Mary Landrieu when his big issue is education of our children. As a former educator, I realize that that is the number one problem in Louisiana. We have jobs, but we don't have people who can fill the jobs. Mary Landrieu tried to bring to Louisiana two programs that would have helped our children. One was early childhood education, would have been paid for by the federal government. And the other one was the internet access out in the rural areas, which is very important. And both were turned down by the Jindal administration. So I'd like to ask him, isn't he pointing his gun at the wrong person? Mary Landrieu's up there trying to bring us money.
All right. Thank you, Liz. Senator?
I am pointing my fingers at every politician who comes to us, gives us a big kiss when it's election time. Actually, they don't give us a kiss. They give us a can of beer and a chicken sandwich, and they forget about the personal.
Are you talking about black voters particularly?
I'm talking about black voters particularly. And that is my issue today. Jindal is not running for election at this time. Mary is, and so that is why at this moment my issue is with Mary, because she is missing Mary right now from my community.
297-5633. We'll return with Senator Albert Guillory, who has the masses fired up about his support, his vigorous support for, I guess, anybody but Mary. We'll talk with him more about alternatives, if he believes there is one, back in 90 seconds. This is Jim Engster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, 297-5633. Senator Elbert Guillory with us. Engster Show at WRKF.org. If you'd like to reach us online, Swede White writes, does Senator Guillory support Medicaid expansion to help the poor and disadvantaged in his district? Senator Landrieu writes, Swede does, while Governor Jindal has blocked it. What about the Medicaid expansion under Obamacare? Are you for that or against it?
I have some serious problems about Obamacare. The biggest problem is that it's an attempt to reform the industry, the healthcare industry. But 52% of every healthcare dollar goes either to insurance companies or to pharmaceutical companies. And if you try to reform an industry, leaving more than 52% of it out by leaving it protected, those people who have made major contributions to the persons who have passed and written the Obamacare legislation, if you set them aside and have no sacrifices for them, then all of the sacrifices will fall upon the healthcare provider, the taxpayers, and the persons who are in the system. That's the biggest problem I have with the healthcare, with the Obamacare.
All right, Shannon and Gross Tet, we're going to get to as many of you as we can. Shannon, good morning. You're on with Senator Guillory.
Good morning, Senator. Good morning, Jim. I've got a question for a Senator. How does he feel and stand about the 3 to 4 work camps that's being built in the Lake Charles area to help supply the workforce for all these plant expansions that he's talking about? And the local workforce is being trained and recruited in that area, yet they're still looking forward to building more work camps.
All right. What do you think, Senator, about the building explosion, if you will, in the Lake Charles area and what is being done to accommodate that?
The building explosion has been very good for the building industry. It's been very good for the supplies industry. The contractors are doing well. There's a lot of employment in that building explosion. I believe that it's going to be good for the economy right now. And when the building jobs go away, the permanent jobs will exist. And we have a little time to get ready, but we have time to get our workforce ready for those 80,000 jobs.
Reg Nolan, South Baton Rouge. Reginald, good morning, Reginald. You're on with Senator Guillory.
Good morning, Jim, and to your guests. I've heard him say a lot about what Barry Landrieu is not done, but I've yet to hear anything that he has done in his district to address unemployment, educational system, and what have you. It's easy to stand on the sideline and throw stones. But my question to him is, what have you done in your district to eliminate the problems that you say Barry Landrieu has not addressed?
Two things. I have worked very to revamp the education system so that high schools will start preparing people for industrial and technical jobs in my area. Been an actual leader in the educational area, among other things, worked to combine the worst performing school in Opelousas, a school that had been an F school for a long time, many years. Top-performing school, Lucas, combines those two so that the people who were formerly in the top school have continued to advance and perform, but the children who were in the lowest-performing school are now up 2 or 3 grades on average. One of the things that I'm doing is working with education so that we prepare our children to be job-ready.
Johnny in Livingston. Johnny, good morning. You're on WRKF with Senator Elbert Guillory.
Yes, my name is Johnny from Livingston.
We know that.
All right. I would like to address a situation.
What's your question, sir?
I would like to know why they don't have enough work release programs for the women in Louisiana. In Livingston, they got an all-male work release program, but they do very little for the women to try to gain employment.
All right. Senator Landrieu voted for the equal pay for women measure. Senator Vitter voted against it. Your thoughts, Senator Elbert Gillery?
When he was talking about work release, it's my understanding that the work release program is for people who are incarcerated. And if women are not being included in the work release program, I was not aware of that, but I will today contact the Department of Corrections and ask them what's going on. I'd like to find out if women are included. I agree with you. I want them to be included in that work release program. Your previous caller, I wasn't finished answering his question. I have brought more jobs to this district, to my district, my senatorial district, in Karen Crow, in Scott, in Lafayette. Just take a look at the record, and he would be surprised and very pleasantly surprised at my effort.
All right. Well, on the question of equal pay for equal work, Louisiana has the biggest disparity in America between men and women. Should there be a law to help the cause for women who are probably underpaid in many places of work?
It's my understanding that the Federal Equal Opportunity Commission, Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, is responsible for enforcing that. The law is on the books. It is being enforced, and it needs to be enforced in Louisiana, without a doubt. If a woman and a man are doing the same job simply because of her gender, her sex, she's not being paid the same amount of money. That is unlawful, and it's immoral, and it needs to be enforced. Mm-hmm. The law is on the book. It simply needs to be enforced. If someone is having that problem, if they will contact my office, we will assist them in getting to the U.S. Mm-hmm. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission and monitor the enforcement of that woman's situation.
Well, what if, for example, which television station do you watch, Senator Gillery?
I don't get a chance to watch
much. Well, okay, I imagine you watch the news every now and then, in Lafayette, maybe. Let's say on your local Lafayette station, you've got a male anchor and a female anchor, and one of them makes more than the other. Maybe the man makes more than the woman. Should it be in law that they make the same amount for the same work?
It's a little bit more complex than that. They have had more experience. One may be a rookie and one may be experienced. One may have come from a major market, say Atlanta or Dallas, into this area. There are a lot of factors, but the bottom line is, basically, there should be a reason if a man and a woman are doing the same job, not getting the same pay. There must be some explanation, and if there's not a good reason for it, then she needs to be bumped up to the same salary that he is.
297-5633. Paul in Opelousas, you're on with Senator Gillery, your senator. Hi, Paul.
How you doing, Jim? How you doing, Elbert? Question, Paul, education. Simple point. THS Vocational Technical School, one of the top welding schools, placement almost 100%. Their machine school closed almost 2 years ago with 90% placement in that class. 90% of the people who took the class got a job. My best barometer for jobs, quick quarter, sorry about that, plenty of machinist jobs. Why did the school close in your district, my district, my hometown, why did the school close the kids that needed that machinist job?
Senator?
It's my understanding, well, first let me say that the school, well, an independent school is now a part of the Louisiana Technical College system. And it's my understanding that the programs that were here were transferred to Lafayette. So the programs still exist. The school was not working out well financially. It had to be merged into that other system. But the programs are 20 minutes away. in Lafayette still in existence.
Paul in Mid-City. Paul, good morning. You're on with Albert Guillory.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was just, with all due respect, I mean, this guy's kind of ignorant. First of all, if a man has to raise a family, he needs to make more money than a woman does. And plus, if you give them both equal salary, then what eventually what you happen is you have divorce. It's very important if the man makes more money than the woman. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
What do you think, Senator?
I wasn't able to hear.
I don't know. I think this guy's pulling our leg. He says it's very important for the man to make more than the woman because the man has to raise his family. Well, some of us were raised by mothers who didn't have a man in the house. So that's a rather simple viewpoint of the world. But
number of Louisiana families that are headed by single women, and I simply disagree with that caller. I believe that any woman who does the job should get paid for it and get paid properly, period. She's got this to pay. She has transportation and children to raise. And just because her husband doesn't make as much money as she is, he should be very happy that his wife is out there working and bringing money into the home.
Brandon asks, let me get to his question. He asks, has Bobby Jindal shown more support for the black community than Mary Landrieu?
You know, I don't know. I know that Bobby has brought a lot of jobs, and I know that Bobby has dealt with the education system in a way that's favorable to the black community. But I haven't analyzed him and his performance. He's not up for re-election at this time. The reason that I'm
have to do with whether or not he's doing a good job?
Well, I know that
did you vote? Did you when you were a Democrat? Did you vote for him?
I did.
All three times?
I don't recall, but I've been a legislator. I've been a strong supporter of his because of his strong support for education reform in and the number of jobs that he has brought. I haven't analyzed all of the things that he has done. His change of UMC in Lafayette, which is just in my district, his change from the charity hospital system to the system that he has created has been wonderful, has been very welcomed by our community. It's been very positive for us. So from those three perspectives, I would give him high grades. But since he's not being reelected, I haven't analyzed him as I have analyzed Mary because she's running for reelection right now.
All right, a question in our remaining time with Senator Albert Guillory from Joyce James. Hello, Jim. I'm a black woman registered to vote in Louisiana. I'm proud to say Senator Guillory does not represent black voters overall. The issues we have in our state are not black or white, but human. He's the perfect tool for promoting this campaign as a race issue. Who made him spokesperson for the black community? Your response.
Lord.
The Lord?
The Lord. The Lord has moved me to address this issue, and it is an issue that needs to be addressed. It is true that we are all in the same canoe. It is true that the water lifts all of the boats in Louisiana, but it is also true that the black community suffers of greater poverty than any other. The education system in the black community is worse than any other. So those issues, whether someone agrees or not, the statistics are very clear. This is to be addressed, and they can be addressed separately, yes. And so I was moved to address those issues and to bring those issues to the forefront in this election.
By the Lord.
As a matter of fact.
By the man
by
upstairs.
Lord. That is correct.
Gail, is it Gail? Gail in River Bend?
Yes, Jim, thank you. Senator, what is your stand on tax credits to establish corporations? I understand that we give tax credits from $4 billion to $7 billion a year, and we have budget problems in Louisiana.
All right. What about tax credits?
I generally favor tax credits, but I believe that we should get something for those credits. I think that they should be reviewed. I've favored that in the legislature. It should be reviewed on a case-by-case basis. If we are getting a lot of jobs, if a lot of families are being supported as a result of those credits, that's one thing. And we should be getting some taxes also. But if we're just giving some tax credits and we're not getting anything much for it, I'm opposed to that individual one.
John on Dalrymple. John, you're on with Senator Guillory. Hi, John.
Yeah, I just wanted to respond to the comment about the division with men making more money than the other. I can just say personally, if I've had a relationship probably a lot longer than both you guys have, and I can guarantee you that when both people make equal amount of money, that causes divorce. And then when the man makes more money, that stabilizes the relationship.
This sounds suspiciously like Paul in Mid-City who called a few minutes ago. I think John on Dalrymple may be his twin. He obviously believes, or he says he believes, that men should make more than women. That doesn't seem to be a contemporary point of view, and for good reason, but I'm sure it's shared by some. Is it shared by you, Senator Elbert Guillory?
My response is as it was before. There are many women who are heads of household. They have expenses. They need to be paid fairly and properly. And if a man is married to a woman who is making more money than he is, he should be very happy that she's helping to support their family.
Well, I would concur, and this is certainly a topic for another show, that sometimes men with our fragile egos, we can't handle it when our female partners are more successful and more financially viable than we are. I would agree with that. Senator, you're suddenly silent on me.
you were doing such a great job. I didn't want to interfere.
Okay, well, what about your candidacy as we part company for this time? And I'm sure we'll talk with you soon, but what about the lieutenant governor's race?
I am a candidate for lieutenant governor. I want to raise the standards. I've been a government manager for a long time. I've been in government and law for 43 years, so I want to bring that experience to the lieutenant governor's office. I want to continue to participate in the policies, the creation of policies for Louisiana, and I want to elevate our tourism.
All right. Well, good luck to you, Senator Elbert Guillory. We shall return with the remarkable composer, Augusta Reed Thomas, after this 90-second pause on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Augusta Reed Thomas is one of America's top composers, a native of New York, and she is one who has been decorated for her performances throughout the world. Her music transcends traditional models, and she is coming this way. And good morning to you, Augusta Reed Thomas.
Good morning.
Well, it's good to have you in our midst soon, and you will be coming to Louisiana State University.
Indeed, I'm really excited to be there with you, and I thank you for having me on your show.
How would you describe your music?
Wow, that's a tough one. I would say colorful and concise and energetic. It's got a lot of rhythm and energy, color, flow. Those are words that leap to mind.
Well, you have a body of work that is substantial, and obviously, you have to focus upon certain types of music when you come to a place like LSU. What will the performance here entail?
Well, I'm really delighted because the director of bands, Damon S. Talley, has programmed two of my larger works, which will each involve about 60 or 70 musicians on stage. their works written for wind ensemble, and one of the works is featuring Seth Orgel, who's an amazing French horn player, one of the best in the world. It's a French horn concerto, so the French horn will be out front with a solo part, and then the student wind ensemble will be behind him. And I'll also be working with the composers, and as you probably know, LSU has had a very, very distinguished composition faculty and festivals and things of this kind for many years. Dinos Constantinides has been a professor there and a wonderful composer, so I'm really looking forward to working with the people who are studying and teaching composition.
Augusta Reed Thomas, she'll be at LSU October 13th and 14th, and she is one of the best in her game, a composer who's married to a composer. That must be interesting.
That's true, yeah. It's unusual. Two composers in one house.
How does that work?
Well, we each have separate rooms. We live in an apartment in Chicago in the Loop, and we each have a separate room just for composing on opposite sides of the apartment.
Must be a pretty big apartment.
Well, it's just enough for what we need. And, of course, we both travel a lot. We're on the road about 200 days a year. So we're also working very often in hotel rooms and different places all around the country.
So how does it work with you doing your thing and your husband, Bernard, doing his thing?
Well, he's a fabulous composer, you know, world-class, amazing composer. And I think one of the blessings is that our works are very different from one another. In the big scheme, we're both writing classical art music for, you know, violins, violas, cellos, chamber orchestra, opera, symphonic works. But when you zoom into the exact pieces of music, our vocabularies and syntaxes are quite different, and it keeps it very interesting, engaging, and fresh. I love hearing his work and watching him make these pieces. As you know, to write a symphony or to write a French horn concerto is a lot of work. It can take 6, 7, 8, 9 months to create a big piece, and one is trying to control the architecture of the piece and the very nuanced details from moment to moment. And so living with somebody who's also making these big works is very inspiring.
You taught at the Eastman School of Music at the age of 33. Quite an honor at any age, but you got there quickly.
I was very, very lucky to be able to teach at some great institutions, and Eastman among them. It's a terrific school, and it was a place that really nurtured me and allowed me to continue to grow as a composer and teach a lot of amazing students who I'm still in touch with, actually, many, many of them. In fact, I'm like the godmother of several of their children, and you know, very, very close with my students. Because when you work every week, year after year, watching someone build their compositions, you get to know them very well. It's part music, part analysis, part therapy, part friendship. It's a very intense relationship. Likewise, when somebody like at LSU is teaching French horn or flute or oboe or clarinet, you work very long hours over many years, one-on-one.
Mm-hmm.
These relationships are very important.
And while at Eastman, Augusta Reed Thomas was appointed composer-in-residence at the Chicago Symphony, another distinct honor and one that does not happen by osmosis. You had to be good at what you do.
I was very fortunate. I had written a lot of orchestral music when I was young, and I just got a call out of the blue, and Pierre Boulez and Daniel Barenboim, both conductors and amazing musicians, Daniel Barenboim is also a world-class pianist, they had reviewed a lot of my symphonic work, and they literally just called me up and said, would you like to be our composer in residence? And I said, yes, and that was it. That was the whole phone call. And then I hung up the phone and jumped up and down with excitement and ended up working for Mr. Boulez and Mr. Barenboim for 10 years as their composer and had the chance to write 9 large orchestral works which were premiered by the Chicago Symphony Orchestra.
You had a milestone birthday a few months ago. Do you feel like your best work remains?
I think so. Composers usually get better as they get older. and we watched someone like Beethoven, who was very much himself as a young Beethoven, and he continued to work and work and work, and you can see his path all the way through his life, but by the time he gets to his late works, he's really in a unique and deeply moving place with his work. Likewise with Haydn, for instance, the great works came at the end. So it's quite normal to have this happen, and I just feel lucky to be healthy and to be able to get up every day and have energy to imagine complete sound worlds out of thin air. There's nothing there, uh-huh. And then I stand at my drafting table with my pens and my rulers and write the music down on paper for 6 or 7 or 8 months, and then all of a sudden there's a brand new piece. It takes a lot of stamina and physical health and mental health to be able to create these things one after the next, year after year after year. So I just feel lucky, again, to just have my health and time. And also the support of some musicians, for instance, to be able to come to LSU and work with a whole bunch of young musicians and engage with them and share my music is priceless. It's golden. It's something that every composer would dream of.
Well, we thank you for joining us today, Augusta Reed Thomas, and look forward to you coming this way next week. One of the best in the world at what she does, composer Augusta Reed Thomas. Thank you.
Oh, immense thanks to you. I'm looking forward.
We look forward to seeing you. Thank you. And in just a moment, we'll hear from Mike Kelly, one of the fine writers who's back with a impressive book, The Bus on Jaffa Road. But I do want to note a sad note for the WRKF community. And Connie Navratil, who was on this station when it began January 18th, 1980, has died. I think Connie was 84 years old. She was in a car accident with her husband, Boris, a few nights ago. And I'm told she died in the emergency room, not of the injuries received in the accident, but of a heart attack. We certainly send our condolences to the many friends and relatives of Connie who came this way from across the pond and made quite an impression and did so on this station for almost 35 years. We will miss Connie Navratil, who gave us the LSU Symphony in all its glory for many, many years on WRKF. And I understand Boris is expected to recover from the injuries he received, so we wish him well. He has lost his mate of many years, and it will be quite a void in our community and for him. Mike Kelly is with us. The book is The Bus on Jaffa Road. A spiral of horror and reckoning emerges from the death of a young American couple in a terrorist bombing in Israel. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm so sorry to hear this latest news about Connie. She sounded like a wonderful pillar of your community.
Yeah, she was a force of nature, no doubt.
I can imagine.
Yeah, now you...
And a welcome one.
Well, that's true, and you cover events in our world that are not so pleasant, and it's detailed in all its horror in your latest work, The Bus on Jaffa Road. Tell us about how you got involved in this particular story, Mike.
Well, I'm a newspaper columnist up here in northern New Jersey. I work at a newspaper called the Bergen Record, which is probably best known to most people around the country as taking the famous picture at Ground Zero on September 11, 2001 of the firefighters raising the flag. I covered those attacks. I literally crossed the Hudson River by jumping on a tugboat that morning and didn't come home for 3 days. And I continued to cover the whole terrorism story as it unfolded in the months after the 9/11 attacks, and actually for several years, traveling to Iraq, to the Middle East, to Southeast Asia on behalf, on assignments for my newspaper, covering the 9/11 Commission. And I just didn't feel like I was getting deep into the story, and I finally decided that terrorism, we cover terrorism as body counts or in relation to whatever particular group is claiming, to have set off a bomb somewhere in the world. But in the lives of the victims, it's very much a personal loss. And that's when I decided to take a hard look at one very, very consequential terrorist attack in Israel and what happened to the American victims' families afterwards. How did they come to grips with the fact that their children had been killed? And that's how I got into it. It took me to Israel, back to Israel, the Gaza Strip, into the West Bank. I went to the home of the man who was the suicide bomber. I went into prison and interviewed the man who built the bomb. I went into the Gaza Strip. I walked the crime scene, as they say, with police and counterterrorism investigators. And then I came back here to the United States, and I found yet another wrinkle in this story, that our own government was opposing the efforts by these families to try to hold somebody accountable.
And this was the Clinton administration.
Correct, yeah. It was back in the 1990s, and I think our country is still grappling with this question, how do we deal with terrorism? And we've seen some of this in recent months. Several Americans have been beheaded on video, and yet our government seems incapable of doing very much about it. And this has been a long-standing problem for our country. This goes back to the 70s, Jim. And by the time the 1990s rolled around, the Clinton administration, like other administrations before and afterwards, was grappling with what to do here. And they decided to punt, and Congress passed a law that basically said that families whose relatives are injured or killed in terrorist incidents can file lawsuits, just as you or I might file a lawsuit, say, if we were injured in a car accident, for example. And that's exactly what happened. Families went to court, and they proved that the Islamic Republic of Iran was involved in financing these bombings and actually training the bomb maker who I interviewed. And they filed lawsuit against the Islamic Republic of Iran and won a major judgment in federal court in Washington. And then after encouraging them to file these lawsuits, the Clinton administration finally decided, no, wait, we don't want you to collect on these judgments because we have all kinds of diplomatic issues that may be compromised as a result of private citizens filing lawsuits. And so began this journey for these families that still continues today.
Now, what did you find, Mike, when you went to the home of the suicide bomber?
Well, I wanted to talk to the parents and ask them, number one, did you know what your son was up to? And number two, all these years later, how have you reconciled the fact that your son got on a bus in downtown Jerusalem, just like any other commuter bus here in the United States, sat down with a duffel bag in his lap, and then at some point he stood up and he yelled Allah Akbar, which is Arabic for God is great. He pressed a button and a massive bomb went off and 26 people were murdered. There was a grandmother who was killed. There was a young couple who were killed who were out looking for an apartment. They had left behind a three-month-old baby. And then there were these two American lovers, a young man and a young woman. They were thinking about getting married.
What about their families? How did they react to this? That's a big part of the story.
Sure. Well, their families were in shock, of course, when this happened. But like any crime victim, the first question you ask if you've been the victim of a crime, I don't care whether your bicycle's been stolen or something really horrific has happened, the first thing you ask is, who did this? And the second thing you ask is, how can I catch the culprit? And those exactly are the questions that these families were asking. And they found that they ran into a brick wall. There was no help from the FBI. There was not a lot of help from the Israeli police, even though the police were conducting their own investigations. And so they ended up going to court and filing a wrongful death lawsuit. And that's how the journey began. And they won. They won an enormous amount of money. One family won $340 million judgment against Iran. Another family won $250 million. And that's when the Clinton administration stepped in and said, whoa, we can't allow you to collect on this because it would compromise our diplomatic relations, such as they were, with Iran. And so began a massive fight. The families eventually, because the Clinton administration was so embarrassed by this, the families, and I detail this in my book, the families eventually collected about 10% of what they had won, which is not a small amount of money, but it hardly even begins to replace the loss of a child. And on another level, I don't really believe it has had any impact on Iran and its terrorist activities.
Well, it's quite a ride, and a book from a fine journalist based in New Jersey, Mike Kelly, a columnist for The Record. The book is The Bus on Jaffa Road, and Mike, we look forward, you're good, we look forward to a future visit of longer duration. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Jim. It's been a real pleasure to speak with you. Take care.
An honor, and good luck to you.
Thank you.
And once again, we will miss Connie Navratil, part of WRKF from 1980 to 2014, and services are pending, and we will, of course, keep you abreast on that as well. For Frank Barnett, I'm Jim Inkster. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Inkster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Inkster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.